indeedy. The Mamas and the Papas. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works. The Paul Molloy Show. It is indeed a Monday. Kind of dreary Monday here in Tampa Bay. Rainy. Whatever. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy Big Ed Davis. Thank you for joining us on this Monday, December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. Don't forget to put your flags out if you get a chance. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Jessica Malugan. She is of the Pacific Legal Foundation. We're going to talk about whether or not to repeal Section 230. Have you heard about Section 230? That's the law that exempts online platforms like Facebook and Twitter, even Google, I think, from being sued for their content. So we're going to talk with her about that, whether or not they should repeal that thing. And a big debate last night between two Georgia Senate candidates took place. In the meantime, President Trump continues to say he will fight, among other places, in Georgia to keep the White House. So we're going to talk about all of that with the proprietor of the only poll that matters for mainstream America, the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi. That'll be a little bit later in the show. And in another edition of Campus Quackery, we will revive Wilbur the Duck and talk about the San Diego School District and white privilege. Indeed. So stay tuned for that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, it is time to reassess. Who are the top 10 richest people in the world? We have the updated Forbes report on that. And we'll see if Big Ed knows who the richest person is. By the way, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in Dunedin in the Overcash Plaza. It is the best haircut for my money in Tampa Bay. You guys can call, set up your appointment, get in there. 727-733-3773. Not open today, but open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. And don't forget Good Morning Clearwater, preceding our show, but they're on Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tantalk Radio Network, Paul and Tracy Allen. By the way, they can create some beautiful posters and banners and flyers for you or your business. Just call them at 727-330-3212. That's 330-3212. Well, I was watching a little football, but more interested in that debate last night. It's the first time I've really seen Kelly Loeffler and Ralph Warnock even talking, if you want to know the truth. But such a big, important race going on there. Senator Loeffler and Warnock faced off, tense national debate. It was televised all over the place. I happened to watch the Fox News channel for it. They are running for one of two seats January the 5th in a runoff election. They went after each other right from the start. Looks like they're very used to going after each other. But it went orderly. They weren't cutting each other off or anything else. I think Kelly Loeffler won the debate quite easily. She was very prepared, although she's a bit robotic. I was watching her. She kind of stares straight into the camera, but she knows what she's talking about. There, by the way, there's another race there. And they were going to have two debates, one of Loeffler and Warnock and the other one with current Senator David Perdue and his challenger, Democrat John Ossoff. But Perdue won't debate the guy. So Ossoff went up and did a debate without Perdue. I didn't watch that one. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit later about that debate with His Eminence, the proprietor of the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi. See if he even watched any of it, get his thoughts on it. In the meantime, lawmakers are set to unveil more details on a coronavirus bill today as they look to break a stalemate over all of this. There's businesses that apparently need a bailout. There are, of course, people that would like a bailout because of their job losses. This bill, it's actually a proposal, about $900 billion, and it's going to be attached to a larger spending bill. You know, at the end of the year, we always get stuck trying to finance the government for the coming year, and they always wait till the last moment. It always involves borrowing more money and printing more money, which I don't think does anybody any good in the long run. Nancy Pelosi and her counterpart in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, have endorsed a narrower bill, spending or stimulus package now. Maybe it's because they think their buddy Joe Biden will be president. They're going to go easy on him. If it was still Trump, maybe they would not give in so easily. But it's a reversal from previous months when they said they needed $2.2 trillion, no matter where it came from. And they threw all kinds of stuff into the package, of course, that had nothing to do with the virus. Anyway, Trump and the Senate Majority Leader, Republican Mitch McConnell, expected to back the bill. So we'll see if that one gets finally through. You know, Trump isn't a conservative in the main sense of the word when it comes to spending. He spends like a wild, crazy sailor a lot of times. And but he's not spending like Pelosi and Schumer want him to spend, that is for sure. So we'll see if this one gets through. Because right now, and this one kind of surprised me, did you know 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck right now? 60%. That's almost two-thirds of the country. This is a poll that found this, commissioned by Highland Solutions. So I'm not sure how accurate it is, but apparently they interviewed over 2,000 people, and they wanted to see how spending habits and personal finances are holding up. 63% of respondents cut back on their spending due to the virus. 6 in 10 saying that they're doing it to be more cautious. 49% add it's because of losing income. That doesn't bode well for us. We got to get this vaccine out and business is up and running again, for sure. But it says here a majority of respondents say the normal night out is taking the biggest hit. 64% are cutting down on dining out or even ordering takeout. I order takeout once in a while. Ed, do you order takeout or do you go and pick it up? I mean, does it bother you about the virus? Has it changed any of that?
No, anytime you exchange anything with anybody, I have hand sanitizer in the car and I use it.
Yeah. And you go in with your mask on and you get your stuff and come out. Do you ever order it delivered or do you just rather go pick it up or what?
No, I'd rather go pick it up. I'm not rich like you. I can't have it delivered.
I make too much money on this show to understand how you would go for pickup. Are you kidding me? All right. Let us take our break. We're going to change topics a little bit. Jessica Malugan is going to join us. We're going to talk about whether or not to repeal Section 230.
Here she comes.
Here she comes.
That little town flirt.
Here she comes.
You're falling for her. And you're gonna get her.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Tune in to Old East Channel Radio every Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Do you remember the 50s, 60s, and 70s? Well, we'll be playing the greatest hits as well as plenty of songs from the B-side. This show is sure to bring back memories, so pull out your record collection, adjust your antenna, and listen to Old East Channel Radio Fridays from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a rainy and kind of coolish Monday, December 7th here in Tampa Bay, and delighted to have Jessica Malugan join us. She is an associate director of the Center for Technology and Innovation at the Pacific Legal Foundation, and we're going to talk about whether or not to repeal this, I guess you could call it, Jessica, some sort of a protection for online platforms based on content, Section 230. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So tell me, do you think we ought to repeal Section 230? A lot of conservatives are upset with the way they're being, they claim, being discriminated against in some of the content, and they're worried about how there's a liberal bent, you know, to Facebook and Twitter and even Google. What do you think?
Well, I think that what is important is for people to have a good understanding of what the actual consequences of repealing Section 230 would be. I don't think that it would solve the problems that many conservatives have with the liberal bent of these platforms. There's a lot of confusion around what exactly Section 230 really does. And I think in order to have a good outcome, you need to be very honest about what would happen if you really took that liability shield away from these online platforms.
Right. Now, in journalism, if you're running a newspaper, you have to be careful about what you say about somebody. If you slander them and they are normally a private citizen, you can be sued. If, it gets a little technical. I mean, the more famous you are, the less chance you have of being able to sue. But on these online, online platforms, tell us about Section 230. I guess it's a way of protecting the carrier, I guess you could say, from whatever somebody wants to say, right?
Yes. The newspaper example is a great way to talk about it. So if I'm running the New York Times, I am sorting through my my articles and my submissions before I publish those. But that, of course, is not the same situation that these online platforms like Twitter and Facebook find themselves in. What composes their content is not things that they choose to publish, but is, in fact, a little closer to them being a distributor of third-party content, mm-hmm. meaning the stuff that users post up there. So for a company like Facebook, that's billions of posts a day. Because of that, it's difficult to hold Facebook legally liable for the billions of posts by other people that they distribute on their platform.
Right.
And that's the big difference that people need to be aware of when they are talking about Section 230. It's not like the New York Times, which has a very manageable amount of information that it needs to be able to verify as far as it knows. It's a little different when we're talking about Section 230 that just says online platforms are not legally liable for what third-party users post on their platform. If Facebook puts a little tag on a post, Facebook is liable for that tag, but it is not liable for someone else's content. And in fact, Section 230 doesn't offer protections against the authors of that content. If they can find you and prove that it's false, someone could still go after you for saying something that's not true. But what it does is allow platforms to not have to over-moderate, meaning take down anything that they think maybe could be false because they're worried about being sued for it. So in that sense, Section 230 acts a little bit like the liability shield we have in incorporation for companies. It sort of takes a lot of the questionable litigation off the shelf and really allows for more speech on the internet, even if you don't like some of the decisions. And I understand that many conservatives don't, and I sympathize, I really do. But if you didn't have that liability shield, you'd see those platforms take down more content, not less, because they're worried about being held liable right. for it. And as far as the conservative content, they don't derive their ability to take down content from Section 230. They derive that from the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects people's speech against government stopping it, but the First Amendment does not mean that you can go onto a private property platform right. like Facebook is and assert yourself against Facebook's wishes. That's just not how it works. So if you didn't have Section 230, you'd have an explosion in litigation. You'd have more content taken down because the platforms would err on the side of caution. And you'd still have as much conservative content as they wanted to take down, taken down.
Yeah.
Which I think conservatives need to be aware of that before they join the battle cry for removing Section 230. Not that there's not legitimate criticism for what these companies take down, but repealing Section 230 probably won't solve that problem.
Right. We're talking with Jessica Malugan of the Pacific Legal Foundation, where she is involved with technology and innovation. You know, Jessica, this is such an interesting area to talk about, because on the one hand, you could say this is a private company. They can they can censor anything they want because they're private. But they're using, I guess you could say, somewhat like radio and television, they're using, would you say they're using some sort of airwave? I mean, they're coming into your house, but maybe it's not quite right. It's not quite as a free thing. I mean, you're paying for their service. So they,
you are,
So can they get away with more personal decision because you have chosen to purchase them?
Yeah, well, so I think, you know, the legal part of that question is we don't know, because when Section 230 was adopted in 1996, it stopped common law from developing how to treat these platforms because we kind of made a decision up front, right? We're not going to treat them like we treat bookstores, newsstands, or certainly not newspapers. My personal opinion is these are private companies, and as conservatives, you know, we're really good about sticking up for private property when it's tangible. But when that property gets digitized or long and skinny like networks, we find that to be more of a muddy water, but it shouldn't be. We may not like the choices that Facebook and Twitter make, but the bottom line is that those are private companies, and the principle here is that they're private property. And as conservatives, we need to respect that and understand that there's going to be negative consequences when we ignore private property rights. Like, we all know that in every other situation, and this isn't any different.
Yeah.
And taking away Section 230 now means that the next generation of platforms, maybe and hopefully one that conservatives agree more with their moderation policies, are not going to be able to develop like Facebook and Twitter did because they had the Section 230 protections. So if you take them away now, that's kind of a barrier to entry of the next generation that we might see the marketplace solve
right.
this problem, right?
If
roughly half of America would like things to be done differently, gosh, if I'm a venture capitalist, that sure is a sign to me that there's an opportunity to do things profitably and differently to accommodate that audience. And to me, I have much more faith in that, in the markets, than I do in Congress figuring this out,
right.
which is composed of a lot of people who I'm pretty sure don't know how to check their own email. So to me, while I completely sympathize with the frustration of people who've had their content removed and taken down, you know, Facebook is not the public square. The public square is the public square.
Right.
But that's not these private platforms. And I understand we don't like what their policies might be. But, you know, there's plenty of liberals around America who I'm sure don't like that Chick-fil-A is closed on Sunday. But I wouldn't advocate that they get to force Chick-fil-A to be open for them because it's to their liking, right?
Right.
So if you think of it in those terms, and also I think it's great to push back on these platforms. It's great to let them know you're frustrated. It's great to threaten to switch to Parler. It's great to do all that. You know, those are market signals. And I think that those are ultimately more productive for everyone than kind of changing the rules by getting rid of Section 230 in midstream. You know, we could have done this differently in 1996 and let common law develop, but we chose not to do that. So now let's not lock Facebook and Twitter into place, right? Because they can afford to comply with it. They have an army of lawyers. They can handle it.
Right.
But the new guy in his garage who's developing something we don't even know about yet, you know, he doesn't have that. And I want him to have that same benefit too.
Good point. We're talking with Jessica Malugan of the Pacific Legal Foundation. Jessica, the committee hearings, are they going to do anything really? I mean, are these committee hearings and bringing these guys from Twitter and Facebook and all that in, you know, and sitting them in front of them and all that kind of, I mean, is this just a showpiece thing, or are they really, do you think they really want to do something, these legislators?
Well, I think there's quite a bit of political theater involved. I think that, you know, it pets the ego of these politicians to drag the world's wealthiest men before them. And I think that they think they're getting some political boost out of it, and maybe they are. But I think the problem with something actually happening with Section 230 is that the left's complaints about Section 230 and the right's complaints about Section 230 are diametrically opposed, meaning those on the right think that these platforms are taking down too much content, and they're censoring conservative voices, and they want less content taken down. But from the left, they feel just as earnestly that there's not enough content being taken down. They find those same statements to be misinformation, harmful, hate speech, whatever, and they want much more taken down, much more moderating to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So short of just getting rid of Section 230, which, again, I think would be a real hardship to conservatives. You know, conservatives are great on social media. They organize better. If you look at the metrics on Facebook, conservative voices dominate in many ways. So short of getting rid of it, and I don't think that's what the right really wants, it's hard to see what they could tinker with and change that they would agree on, right? If one wants more moderation and one wants less, that means that there's bipartisanship to the extent that we both don't like it. But that doesn't mean that there's a lot of agreement on what the solution is.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I think this is a fascinating topic. I mean, like you say, maybe the next wave will be more conservative people running these things. Right now, it does seem like there are more liberal people running these things. And indeed, I think there is some censorship that, I mean, if you just stand back and look at it, it tends to favor liberals. And it drives some of the conservatives crazy. But then I think about it and I go, yeah, but, you know, it's their own platform. And if you're a conservative and you're upset about it, Don't join the discussion. There's a million other things you could do, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I completely understand the frustration, but I would just urge people to cling to those first principles of property rights. And if you really believe in the marketplace over regulation, this is a great way to show it. And it's a fascinating topic. I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, I look at newspapers. And, you know, let's be honest, there's a huge liberal bent out there with newspapers. It's been that way forever, as far as I can tell, or a long, long time. And we kind of got used to it. And then other things came along, but talk radio is like maybe 90% conservative for some reason, you know? So
yeah, that's right. That's right. And I mean, because, you know, what the New York Times does is make room for the Wall Street Journal, right?
Yeah, right.
If it really is this many voices, there'll be something. And you know, any kind of moderation, like I said, billions of posts, billions of users worldwide, that's really, even if you had the best of intentions and you were, you know, the Switzerland of content moderation, it would still be very difficult to do that volume of moderation well. It's just a hard thing. So, like, let's give this new thing a little time in the marketplace to maybe produce some solutions. Let's not get the government involved, because that's really not the answer.
Right, indeed. Well said, Jessica. Really appreciate being talking with you on this. I know we'll be talking again down the road, but thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
Indeed. Well, thank you. All right. Jessica Balugan, we're going to take our break. When we come back, did you watch any of that debate last night? At the same time, Donald Trump, who, by the way, went out and promoted the two Republican candidates for Senate in Georgia, he continues to say he's going to fight to keep the White House. Going to talk about that with the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Ceresi, and our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi.
Be to my side, my gal corn, got to tell her that I'm out. Cause Thursday is a hard working day, and Friday I'll get my pay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the Tantalk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up, every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM, to Good Morning Clearwater.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back December 7th. Don't forget Pearl Harbor Day. That's what started us or got us into World War II. That was what now? My goodness, that was like, how many years ago? 79 years ago now. Wow. Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is eyeing a move to Florida for one of its key divisions, at least, and what could be another major blow to the Big Apple. Boy, they're losing businesses left and right. I don't know. Why do they keep that New York mayor, de Blasio? I can't understand it. It seems like he's doing everything wrong. Anyway, they are considering relocating their asset management arms, worth about $8 billion, with a B, to Palm Beach County or Fort Lauderdale. You know, they're not the first company to consider. In fact, Carl Icahn left New York City and relocated here to Florida. Lots of other companies are considering it as well. And it ain't just the weather. It's the taxes. It's all the regulations. I mean, why don't they understand and learn from that? Anyway, we are delighted to have both of the Ceresi brothers, I think, with us. We've got, of course, Andrew, the master barber, and our eye in the northern sky has returned, Angelo Ceresi. Angelo, how are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you all down there?
Well, we're doing well. It's a little rainy down here. Do you have some snow up there?
Yeah, we've had some snow flurries. We've had maybe the other day, maybe like an inch on the ground, but It's gone now.
Mm-hmm. And how are things going on the virus end around Rochester where you are? Now, you're up in kind of northern New York State near the Canadian border. Are things getting better there?
No, they've actually had, like, the other day, 654 cases, positive cases.
Wow.
And we're in Como, which is what's called the Orange Zone, which where they closed down a lot of restaurants, a lot of businesses and stuff like that.
You think it's a good idea to continue to close down these restaurants? Look what's going on in the rest of the country. You're seeing a backlash by a lot of businesses. Is that happening there in Rochester?
Yeah, a friend of mine just closed his doors where our band used to play all the time. This is the second time he's had to close down now since this coronavirus hit, and Cuomo has closed down the businesses, and he just shut down totally now. He just says it's
really
too hard, he can't afford it anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
And he went out of business.
And he did go completely out.
Completely out.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's going on all over the place. Down here in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis has been a little bit, I guess the word would be, a little bit more liberal with businesses, right, Andrew? And I don't know if, most of these places that in other areas are being shut down, I think Governor DeSantis is leaving alone, right?
Well, Governor DeSantis is doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's face the facts. The death rates are below 1%. And you're going to close down the economy for that? Look at New York. These people are starting to revolt up there already. Look
yeah.
in the news. All right? People in Oregon, they're starting to. Everybody's starting to, Paul. You know what they're doing? They're causing the revolution, and that's what they want.
Yeah. California's having all kinds of trouble with their governor shutting things down. And as we mentioned, New York definitely. And there's a backlash. There's a real backlash. I think people are kind of getting used to understanding how to negotiate this virus, don't you think? I mean, we put our masks on when we feel that we're going to get into a crowded area. We try to social distance a little bit, or we know the people. If we know the people, we know that they're healthy, et cetera. So maybe they don't give us enough credit, right? What do you think about that, Angelo?
Well, I'll be honest with you. A friend of mine, I was talking to him yesterday. Now, he caught that COVID-19. He's like maybe a year and a half older than me. And he wasn't even going to make it. He was in bad shape, he said.
Mm.
So he caught it over the Thanksgiving holiday.
I see.
He was near his son-in-law, and his son-in-law had tested positive for COVID, I guess, afterwards. And then a few days later, he got it. He's had it for the last 5 days. He said he couldn't get his head off the pillow. The headache was brutal. He kept having the runs.
yeah. It's now
vomiting and all that stuff.
Yeah. But was nothing. He susceptible? Did he? In other
I think
words,
he had some underlying issues.
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, people like that have to kind of understand they're more vulnerable.
Right.
We have to have some personal responsibility, I would think.
Well, I'm staying in the house. I mean, since the numbers are continuing to rise, my wife and I haven't really been going out. Because, I mean, our area where we live is considered the orange zone, you know?
Now, you say the orange zone. Is that what the governor of New York, Cuomo, has indicated is the most dangerous zone?
Yeah, I guess. Going to a complete shutdown, like parts of Rochester and outlying counties are in what, you know, the numbers have risen almost like 7%.
Well, do you agree with that?
Closing down? Well, I just...
The orange zone,
myself,
zoning
doing,
it out?
Well, I don't know. I don't believe in putting people out of business or anything
that. No,
of course
not. I think
people should be able to... You know, decide for themselves.
No, but I mean, Cuomo deciding this area we're going to make orange, and this area will be green, and this, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so you've got one side of the area orange, and the other side is open.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where you're coming up with these lines.
Yeah, that's exactly. So, Andrew, down here, it ain't so complicated, right? And
let me ask my brother one question.
Sure.
Hey, Angelo, your buddy called you yesterday and told you he's okay?
Well, he's doing better now, yeah.
Well, okay. He
survived,
didn't he? Okay, no more shit. You know what? We need to stop talking about the virus here.
Okay.
Because we're wasting our time. Let's get into some important stuff, all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I mean, we saw Donald Trump the other night in Georgia, didn't we?
Yes.
All right. Let me tell you, Paul, they got more and more and more evidence. You know it, and I know it. Donald Trump is going to be the president.
I
think this is going down, Paul, like you've never seen. Look at Barr. All of a sudden, he's thinking of resigning. Come on. He's so far involved in the deep state, that's why nothing has gone on for 2 years.
You think Attorney General Barr is involved with Democrats?
Oh, of course. He was a George Bush appointee, wasn't he? I think it's George Bush. But he turned out to be a schmuck, didn't he?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he said that
You don't know. Well, look at how he talks. Look at how he put down Trump. He was part of the deep state globalist group.
He's been loyal to Trump. He's been loyal George to Bush Trump for all of these years.
Get out of here, please. George Bush has been loyal to
I'll
Trump.
I think he was pulling smoke to the president, you know, say, oh, yeah, we're doing this and we're doing that. And Trump, who trusted him, you know, this thing should have been resolved 2 years ago.
Do either one of you think that Barr has been, you know, like, undermining Trump all of these years?
Don't doubt it one minute, Paul.
Huh?
I don't doubt it 1 minute.
Okay.
Listen, the deep state is deep. Did you happen to watch the debate last night? I thought that was
great. Yes, we did. In fact, I was going to ask you.
Politics behind the Bible.
First of all, let me ask both of you. First of all, Angelo, did you watch the debate?
I saw a little bit of it.
Okay. And Andrew, you watched the good portion of it, right?
I watched the whole thing.
Okay. I thought Kelly Loeffler absolutely won that debate. What do you think?
She had a grand slam, Paul. She was composed. She had the answers. She was to the point all the time. Like I said, the minister couldn't answer a question. He's got, I'm Matthew 5:14. You know what? Quit hiding behind the Bible. You're full of crap. You back that pastor in Chicago who says, God damned America.
Yeah.
Okay? The guy hates the police. He calls him this, that. But I'm hiding behind the Bible, so I'm a Christian. He's full of crap.
But, you know, the main thing is that the people of Georgia, they're the ones that hold the fate of the Senate in their hands. And if they vote and they understand what's going on, the Senate stays Republican. If not, you know,
you can the presidency there, Angela, the people in Georgia voted for Trump, too. Georgia is a stolen state. They're proving it. Listen, the heads of Georgia, they're denying it. Of course, they're denying everything. Look at the evidence they've got. More and more every day is disgusting.
Well, I really believe that this election was stolen, and they've been planning this for the last 2 years. When they started with that House Rule number one in 2018 with the mail-in ballot. And then what happened is COVID-19, and they weaponized it.
Angelo, let me ask you, because I talk with Andrew a little more frequently on it, but Angelo, do you think it was a coordinated conspiracy by Democrats or the like, or do you think that each of those states, like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, do you think that they were doing it kind of on their own, just with inner city hanky-panky and fraud? What do you think? Do you think it was...
I think it was coordinated. They had 2 years to do this, and they knew that the battleground states that they had to tackle. And it was a very, very concerted effort on the Democratic part to cheat in this election. That they felt that this last election, you know, they degraded Trump from day one and his family. And to them, they took it so serious that they coordinated it for the last couple of years to get this thing and turn it towards them.
Right. And Andrew, I know you feel there's a bit of a coordination. Did either one of you watch and follow the debate, I think, if I remember rightly, Mark Levin on Fox?
I watched Mark Levin, yes.
He made a compelling case, I thought, for the Pennsylvania wrongdoing and how that could have affected an actual fair vote tally there with the legislature battling it out with the clerk you know, whether it was the election clerk that should be making decisions or the state legislature. It got a little complicated, but...
Well, the thing is, it's the Constitution specifically states the state legislatures will determine election law.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Secretary of State, not the governor or anything like that. And if this goes to the Supreme Court, how can it not? They have to rule in favor of...
In other words, they weren't following their own rules, and they actually dug into their own state constitution and overturned some of the rules there, too. That's what
yes.
Levin's case was. I thought he made a compelling case. I don't know.
I wish that President Trump would have him as a legal
I was thinking of that myself. What do you think, Andrew? Have you ever watched Levin? He's pretty...
Oh, yeah.
He's
I watch him. He's pretty thorough. He's right to the point.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, Paul?
Yeah.
Speaking of the fraud in Georgia, okay, the four people that were in that room, all right, during the day there was a Democrat senator in that room counting ballots, okay, got videos of her in there.
Then, a Democratic senator? Which one?
Yes.
Do you recall? Which
she's
one?
She's a woman. She's a woman.
I mean,
forgot her name.
She's a state yes. senator or a U.S. senator?
She might, I believe a U.S. senator. Or she might have, no, she might have, no, she was a U.S. senator, I believe.
She was counting ballots.
Counting ballots.
Who said that or pointed that out?
They pointed it right out in the video that they showed on news. They showed her in the background, and they showed her with the ballot in her hand.
Okay.
Now, the four people that were there, the guy's name was Ruby Freeman and his daughter, okay? The election supervisor, Wanda Moss. They were going to do an interview on television. All of a sudden, they canceled their interview, and they all lawyered up, Paul.
Now, these two people you're talking about, were they people that wanted to talk about what they saw as trouble?
I don't know. They were okay. They were going to do an interview. That's all I know. And they were the people that I guess were in this room.
Wow. Well, you
know,
there's no
supervisor happened to be there.
Yeah. There's no doubt. There's fraud, in my opinion, in every inner city. In every city, when it comes to this, the question is how much, right?
Well,
yeah.
The thing is that I remember 1960, John Kennedy and Richard Nixon. On election night, they were waiting for the votes to come in and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, like later on, in the wee morning of the hours, Chicago, the mayor, Richard Daley, who was the mayor at the time in Chicago, came up with almost 100,000 votes there in Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's
that
no...
put Kennedy... gave him the electoral votes. And Richard Nixon, his lawyers and everybody was saying, you have to challenge this, everything. And Richard Nixon says, no, I won't put this country through something like this.
So
it's pretty sad that they have corruption in our elections going back to 1960.
Do you think Nixon did the right thing, Angelo? And should Trump also do the right thing? Not right thing, but do the same thing?
It's a different time. 1960, things were really shaded. Now stuff is more out in the open, and we should not tolerate what is going on.
Yeah.
How rigging an election and doing all this stuff like they did during this election. No, I think he should fight it on. And wherever the chips fall, they fall.
I think you make a good point. I think you both do. And I want to thank both of you for coming on this morning. Angelo, great to talk with you again. And Andrew, the Master Barber, will be talking with you again tomorrow, God willing. So thanks to both of you.
You have a good day, buddy.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both. There they go. The brothers Ceresi. Going to take our final break. It'll be a short one. And when we come back, among other things, we're dusting off Wilbur the Duck.
Well, I wanna,
this is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut, you'll ever experience and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the Tan Talk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM to Good Morning Clearwater.
Join Joe Pippin for Ask an Attorney Radio Show, Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. Ask an Attorney is Florida's longest running radio show for over 35 years now. So if you've got a question for an attorney, call Joe Pippin during his live radio show. Ask a question, get an answer, free of charge, of course. Saturday mornings, live from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Or to contact Joe Pippin directly, call 727-586-3306.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back for the final section of Freedom Works. By the way, we're here every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And if you can't listen to us live, Big Ed sets up all our shows on podcast. Just go to ourfreedomworks.com. Well, some sad news. Walter Williams has died. He was a great conservative economics man, renowned professor at George Mason University. He was 84 years old. He taught economics at George Mason for 40 years, and he also had a nationally syndicated newspaper column. He died after teaching a day after teaching his final class at the school. Isn't that interesting? Senator Ted Cruz called the guy legendary, brilliant, incisive, witty. Mark Levin, who we were just talking about, called Williams' death a punch in the gut. He had him on his show, I'm sure, a couple of times. And we had Walter Williams on our program some years back. Anyway, I wanted you to know about that. Ah, now, San Diego teachers are requiring white people that are teachers to undergo white privilege training. Indeed, white privilege training in which they must accept that their supposed unconscious bias is perpetrating racial superstructures in the system. Can you believe that? This is a document obtained by an independent journalist. It shows training sessions with instructors notifying faculty members they will experience guilt, anger, apathy, and closed-mindedness. I guess, you know, it doesn't pay to be a white teacher in San Diego because you're just going to be dumped with guilt. The teachers are compelled to acknowledge that they are living on land that was stolen by the Indians. Well, we knew that for a while, did we not? They were also required to watch clips of Robin DiAngelo, the author of the book White Fragility, and also Ibram X. Kendi, author of the book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. So, Ed, I want you to go run out and buy that book so that we both understand how this works. This is getting pretty crazy. That's all I got to say.
Never ends.
Never does end. All right. Time for our top 10. Of course, we've done the 10 richest in the world before, but this is the updated version, Ed, and I want to see if you know who's number one. Okay. Comes from Forbes magazine. So here we go. Number 10. Sergey Brin, co-founder of Alphabet. Have you ever heard of Alphabet?
Nope.
He has a net worth of about $75 billion. That's pretty good. He co-founded Google also, along with Larry Page in 1998. Alphabet is indeed some sort of a part of Google, now that I think about it. Okay. Number 9. Mukesh Ambani, hope I pronounced it right, founding chairman of Reliance Industries, has a net worth of $74.8 billion. Number 8, Larry Ellison. He's got he's $75.8 billion, which he earned from Oracle. He co-founded Oracle. Remember Oracle?
Mm-hmm.
1977. He quit the company in 2014. Okay, number seven. Larry Page. Now, he's the co-founder of Google. He's worth $76.9 billion. Good God. What do you do with all that money? I mean, you wake up in the morning. You don't have to do a doggone thing for the rest of your life except spend it if you wanted to, you know? Number six. Well, this guy's been on for a long time. Warren Buffett.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, he's been on. The Oracle of Omaha, one of the most successful investors of all time, $86.9 billion. Number five. Mark Zuckerberg, remember him, co-founder of Facebook, $99.9 billion. Just one little tad over, and you're right at $100 billion. Number four, Elon Musk. He's worked to revolutionize transportation, both on Earth and up in space now, right?
Yep.
And he's worth $105.4 billion. It pays to look up at the sky with a telescope and decide you want to do something. Number three, Bill Gates. Oh, he's been on here forever, hasn't he? He's number three, co-founder, of course, of Microsoft. His net worth, a paltry $118.6 billion. He founded a, did you know he worked in a garage setting this thing up?
Yeah.
With this guy, Paul Allen.
Yeah.
Now I guess he just is trying to figure out ways to give away his money. You know?
Yeah.
He's got so much of it. Number two, Bernard Arnault, I guess is the way you pronounce it, and family. He's in France, chairman and CEO of LVMH. His net worth is $139.5 billion earned from his business across an empire of more than 70 brands, including Louis Vuitton and Sephora, among others. I had not heard of that guy before, but he's the second richest in the world.
Hmm.
Wow. All right, my friend.
I'm going to go with the Walmart people. Is it Walton?
Well, now, think about this. We're only talking about one individual.
Oh, that's the family.
You might be thinking of it. I'm not saying that it isn't one of them, and I'll allow you to say that if you want.
I don't know other than that.
You know.
Oh, I do?
Okay. Oh, you know this guy.
Well,
it ain't him, though.
Tell him to send money, then.
All right. Jeff Bezos.
No, I don't know
who
that
sure
is.
You do. Jeff Bezos. He's the founder of Amazon. He's the guy that runs
Jeff,
Amazon.
Jeff, we had lunch last week.
Yeah, well, no, come on now. Amazon founder and CEO. You know how much? $182.4 billion. Hell, that's more than I make
now,
in
I wonder
3 years.
How much was he before Amazon, I wonder?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess,
I mean,
you know,
did
he also
make it all from Amazon?
He also has, you know, got cable companies. What?
Yeah. I wonder if he made it all from Amazon.
Most of it, I
like
would think.
Bill Gates made it all from Microsoft.
Pretty
you know?
Much, yes, yeah. Indeed. All right, my friends, we will be back tomorrow, Tuesday. But remember, in the meantime, freedom works.